This is Katie and Kate Carbondale. Support for GeekSpeak comes from Louis the Computer Guy, providing PC and Mac repair, tutoring, web design. Be secure, informed, and connected. 970-948-7992. I'm your host, Matt McBear, from Run Fork Help Desk in studio with Louis the Computer Guy.
How's it going, Matt?
Going good.
Good.
Beautiful wintry March day.
Yes. So. You know, when it was first moving in earlier today, it kind of felt like October, you know, kind of like this, because everything had melted off so much. It just felt like the first snow of the year, which isn't exactly accurate.
No.
We've had snow.
But,
yeah. So, all right. Well, hey, this is GeekSpeak. If you have any computer questions, comments, gripes, complaints, 970-963-2976 is the number, and our operators are standing by.
Yes.
So.
No password resets today. Sorry.
Yeah. I came in hot today from a password debacle session, and I wish I had some sage advice that would like make it so that our listeners didn't have to go through what I went through today, but I don't. And because, you know, devices just decide that they needed the password put in again at their own whim, you know. It's right.
So somebody had the password reset time set to 3,650 days.
Oh. 10 years?
10 years. It's like, as long as they should change it every 10 years.
I was trying to think like of the things that I own that require passwords that I've actually had for 10 years at this point, you know. But I get, technically I've had my Gmail account that long, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah. Who are you using for mail hosting these days?
I'm using Zoho. Well, so I have my own mail server. I have my own mail server, which I use a little bit for testing. I use Zoho for mail hosting, and I am considering switching over to Proton.
Okay.
So
got it.
That's where I'm at. I think this year I put together a true NAS at my house last fall, and I am seriously considering like making a big push this year to de-Google, de-Apple, de-everyone.
Mm-hmm.
You know, all the big players. No Microsoft, no Google, no, just get rid of everything.
Uh-huh. Got it.
I'm kind of done with them.
If you're big corporate, you're not doing business with Matt McBrayer.
That's kind of where I'm getting to.
Hey, that's nothing wrong with that. Nothing wrong with that. So, you know, something that I've come across a couple times just in the last month and a half is and you can like tell me if you've had any experience with this, Matt. When one of the most common email hacks these days is somebody will hack into your mail account, and they won't just like send out a bunch of, you know, enlargement spam or whatever. They kind of sit there and quietly watch and listen to the conversations that are going on. And if they've hacked a business account, a lot of times businesses are exchanging information regarding wire transfers over email.
That's terrifying.
It is. And basically the way the scam works is the hacker goes in and creates a rule in your mail system that sends any they pick a target, you know, one of your customers. And then they set up a rule that makes it so that any correspondence that comes in from that customer goes into some obscure, can't be found, not easily seen folder. And then they start corresponding with the customer who's about to send money via wire transfer. And they let you know that the wire transfer information has been provided with outdated wire transfer information, and that here is the new information. And so basically the way it works is the customer then goes ahead and wire transfers directly to the hacker. And I have seen damages to businesses in the six figures area from this particular scam. So my recommendation for you business owners out there, if you conduct business in this fashion, if you receive deposits from customers via wire transfer, I strongly recommend you include in the verbiage in your, I don't know, maybe your introductory packet when you first start working with a client, and let them know that any changes to the wire transfer regimen must be confirmed live. In other words, if they receive an email saying that your wire transfer yep. information has changed, that they should contact your company directly and confirm that that is indeed the case. So this could save you a lot of grief. And if you include that language in your client correspondence, then it, on a certain level, indemnifies you against people wiring large sums of money to people in unknown places around the world. So it's have you had any of that kind of stuff come down?
Was it?
You
know? Yeah, and it was halfway through the five figures.
Wow.
Luckily, they were able to recover all but, $9,000 or something.
Yeah.
So, and I haven't talked to them in a while, so I don't know if they were able to get the remaining amount, but
yeah
it was well into the five figures. Mm-hmm. And
so we're not talking chump change here. It's worth taking that extra time to do an addendum to your engagement yep. letter. I guess that's what you call it.
Well,
when you first engage a customer,
You should be using a secure and self-deleting tool to send that information anyway.
I
use so like if I'm sending a if a client's having me set up like an SSID and password, I'll generate the computer on my the password on my computer, and get the system configured, and then I use a tool called Bitwarden Send, and I put in the information in a text file, and I send them an email, and it has a link to it.
Okay.
And then that can get decrypted on your computer. Bitwarden, there's no 30 party. And then I say, well, I will either text you or I will tell you the password over the phone, so that even if somebody, like in this case, if somebody is sitting in, doing a man in the basically a man in the middle attack with the email, there's a third party system where I'm contacting you to give you that information.
Sure. Yeah. Well, that's a great way to do it. And I'll tell you the truth. I'm not absolutely sure that the initial wire transfer information was transmitted over email or in an unsecure fashion, but the man in the middle information was transmitted that way. And, we can't expect scammers to have best practices, But anyway, I just strongly recommend you include that in your engagement letter.
As a client and as in both cases, if you're sending a large sum of money, call, get a hold of the person the way that you customarily get a hold of them, can talk to them in basically real time and confirm.
Yeah.
Just
have a quick conversation. Say, hey, I'm getting ready to wire this, $60,000 to you. And this is the banking information that I have, and I just want to confirm that it's correct. And before you hit the send button, make sure that they confirm everything. And an angle that I considered thought about for a solution for some of these customers is doing like a secure payment portal type of thing. My understanding is that I don't personally use the portal of that nature that QuickBooks or Intuit runs, and I'm certainly at this moment not a fan of Intuit, but my understanding is that there is a mechanism, if you're doing QuickBooks invoicing, there is a mechanism where you can activate, probably for a nice little monthly fee with Intuit, you can activate a secure payment portal, and your customers can click on a link in the invoice. It'll take them to that secure payment portal, and then they can go ahead and submit their payment that way. So that's one way. Of course, Intuit loves to skim money off the top, and it will not be free. In addition to the monthly fee to have the portal, you'll probably pay a percentage on top of that. But that is a heck of a lot better than losing $60,000. So looks like we got a call coming in.
You're on with the Geeks.
Hey, Geeks. It's Donna. How are you?
We're good. How you doing, Donna?
pretty good. I'm just wondering, you know, I have paid for invoices through that Intuit portal. So I don't know. They do take money off the top, you think?
I'm pretty much all credit card processors do. So
yeah. I mean, if it's a card transaction, because they're getting dinged, I'm pretty sure, you know, the next person they pass it off to is probably charging them a percentage.
Yeah, because I use Invoice Ninja for my client portal and Stripe as my processor.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, and it's like,
well, yeah. I mean, you know, if they would call and say, hey, can you just pay with an EFT or something, I would have done that.
Yeah.
But have you guys gotten any, like, 1099s through Venmo or Zelle or any of that?
No, I have not. Have you received some that way?
No, but I had I was making a little bit of money by using a Rover.
Uh-huh.
That's a cat boarding. And I was just kind of curious because the amount I made wasn't very much, but they didn't send a 1099. I was kind of surprised.
Ah.
But
okay. Got it.
They kind of implied, like, in the future, I think they're going to be doing that, but maybe this is, like, the last year you have to be.
I wonder if it has to be over $600.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, but still, I mean, there's been lots of transactions I do with friends, especially when I travel to Europe, and we're just constantly, every day, Venmoing back and forth, and so that definitely is all personal. I would hate for them to send me a 1099 for some, you know, paying my friend for travel money.
Yeah,
that
that's
be right.
Okay. I get what you're saying. 1099s on Venmo transactions that they think are business related. So if that's what you're.
Yeah, I don't.
Yeah.
Yeah. Right.
Got it. Huh.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I do know this, and, you know, admittedly, you know, so I'm like totally talking off the cuff. This is all third, you know, secondhand, but I do understand that there is a delineation between people that you do transactions with on Venmo, whether they're designated as friends or customers, and the whether or not there's a fee and a reporting obligation on their end. If it's all done with friends, there's no fee and there's no reporting obligation. And if it's done with somebody that's obviously a business transaction, then there is, I guess, they do charge an extra fee and there is a reporting, you know, they will report to the IRS.
I set up my business Venmo recently.
Uh-huh.
Because one of my clients wanted to pay with Venmo, so it's But again, I don't think I'll get anything from them. I guess we'll see.
Yeah. You know, I don't have a business. I'm just friends with all these people, and if they want to send me a little bit of money for fixing their email, have at it.
Right. Well, so. And then there's things like, you know, I don't know, if I lend somebody money or they lend me money and then I pay them back, and it could be you know, more than $1,000, like my sister's, for example. So I don't know. I'm just very skeptical still about all this, and I just don't want to have to prove that things were personal. Mm-hmm.
I would admit that it bears some looking into, and you know, I spend a lot of time just sitting around just twiddling my thumbs and doing crossword puzzles, and you know, I should probably dedicate some of that time to looking into that.
Yeah, one more thing I wanted to mention that's, by the way, what happened to me is I had paid a bill through Chase Bill Pay.
Uh-huh.
And they immediately take the money out of my account. But guess what? The check was never cashed. And I just assumed that the company got my check, and they never did. It was an HOA. So eventually got like a late notice. I'm like, wait a minute. And I had proof that the money had come out of my account. And they're like, we never got it. So I called Chase and they're like, oh, yeah, we'll just take the money out. But if the check never gets cashed,
bonus.
You know, the money.
That's literally bonus for them. Yeah.
So
this is a this is one of these bill payment things where you log in and you say I want to pay a bill, and you'd say who it is and how much it is and what their address is and everything, and then they basically put the check together and mail it out. Is that that's kind of how it?
Correct.
And the minute they mail it out, they take it out of your bank account. And then whether or not
the minute you not the minute you they mail it, the minute you
submit the payment, the bill, the check request,
submit it, and
all right.
And so like and it's really funny because I'll say I want it to arrive on the first of the month, and it'll arrive on the third. But they and these are where they actually mail a physical check. So yeah, I'm just letting people know that they do take the money out of the account, but that does not mean your check was cashed.
Yeah,
so I'm
yeah.
not going to use that bill pay anymore.
Well, there's so much.
It's really frustrating because I have to go back to like writing a check then for my HOA.
Yeah. Well, there, you know, are a lot of imperfections in this whole new like digital order. You know, the movement of money, and there are definitely plenty of pitfalls for things to break down. Just to interject, as far as QuickBooks percentages for transaction payment receipts, their card and digital wallets 2.99%, ACH bank payments 1%, card readers 2.5%, and keyed in cards 3.5%. So
man, I'm in the wrong business.
That went up 2 or 3 years ago to those kinds of levels.
Well, everything associated with Intuit went up.
Yeah,
2 or 3 years ago, somebody was like hungry. It's somebody needed to put new tires in their Rolls Royce or something.
Yeah, you know? Visa changed their rates like 2 or 3 years ago. I have to look up when.
Got it. Yeah. So.
So well, seemed like there was one more question I was going to ask you guys, but. I am getting ready to go to Europe again, and I'm a little concerned about not getting my text messages again. But
is this on business again, or no?
Is just for fun to go visit my sisters. But last time I had, you know, I'd mentioned it before. I didn't get any text messages the whole time, and I still don't know if it was due to my NordVPN or if it was the SIM card, the foreign SIM card, and all that. So I'm going to have to look into that in the next couple of weeks before I get out.
I bet it was a SIM card because that's going to be the association with the SMS messaging. Unless you have a web portal where you can get to that stuff, you know, or an app, an app for your wireless vendor.
Well, and the thing is, well, I don't know. The thing is that they ask when you get the SIM card, what country do you want to use the SIM card from? And I picked the country I was going to instead of the United States. So I'm not sure what I should have chosen.
I can't wait until they get all this international stuff figured out because it's just been. There were times where you certain phones in the United States, you'd go to Mexico or Canada and it was like same difference, you know, nobody cared. It didn't show up any different. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, you don't have the international roaming plan. You need to get that, you know, and then I forgot to cancel the international roaming plan. And 2 years later, I was up in Orcas Island and my phone saw Vancouver. And it said, oh, you're on a foreign network, you know. Anyway, I digress. All right.
Okay.
Well, hey, thanks for calling there, dear.
Thank you. Okay.
When's the trip?
Have a good day.
When is the trip?
It's in 2 weeks.
Oh, okay.
2 weeks.
So we shouldn't be, sitting with bated breath waiting for you to call in 2 weeks. So.
The 14th. So I'll be around 2 weeks from now. Right. You're right. I'll be in.
You know what? If you call from Europe, it would be okay. So.
Okay. You guys have a good night.
I've done it. So.
I know.
All right.
Okay, see you later.
Take care, Donna.
Bye.
All right. That was our foreign correspondent, Donna Dalton, calling in from sunny Denver, Colorado.
Didn't look. By all the storm warnings, it didn't look like it.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, there's a bunch of storm warnings out on the eastern slope.
Yeah, good deal.
You're listening to Geek Speak on KDNK, 970-963-2976.
Yeah, give us a call. We got about 5 minutes. That's about enough time to help you effectively jiggle your printer cable. So, it's... Yeah.
Cable printer should have cables, in my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
Although I'll have to say the wireless stuff has gotten better.
Yeah.
But just put it next to your router, plug it in with an Ethernet, and be done with it.
Yeah.
That's the way to do your printer.
You know, an increasing number of them though will
don't
not
have
work with cables. So it's like, yeah, if you
then you just get out your bat, take it out in the thing.
Yeah.
What song was that? I'm trying.
Put on some gangster rap.
Yeah. Put on some gangster rap and just. Beat it until it's done.
Yeah, exactly. If you need to see how to do that, there's a scene on Office Space.
Yeah, so look on Office Space. There's a scene about taking the PC load letter printer out and taking care of business.
Yeah, exactly. So, very good. Well, you know, I don't want to get political with this because I know this issue has been politicized a bit, but have you been following the whole thing with Dogecoin or are you up to speed on that? Can you educate me? I'm so ignorant about it.
I would say I only watch Ethereum and Bitcoin.
Okay.
So that's as far as I go into.
Because my understanding is that there's an attempt to weave this cryptocurrency Dogecoin somehow into our governmental system.
See, I thought I thought there was a thing for that they wanted to do some of the reserve currency in Bitcoin. I did not hear Dogecoin.
Oh, okay.
So that's what I've heard. So, okay. But I've not, like I said, I've not been watching it very closely. Mm-hmm. I did see an article briefly that said that Trump wanted to get some Bitcoin for the government to hold. You know, just like, you know, kind of like we hold oil and gold and so and other valuable things.
Okay.
So that's what it sounded like to me. You know, I don't know if it's a good investment or not. I mean, it is deflationary by nature. Mm-hmm. It's designed to be deflationary. At least, Bitcoin is deflationary by nature. So theoretically, the value of it should only go up. But and I don't really see it that much different than our fiat currency. So, you know, it's just something to invest in. So I'm not necessarily, you know, it's just you need to do the math and see if it makes sense. That's all.
Sure.
Just like any other investment.
Well, you know, my observation about the fiat currency and you know, the basis for it is, you know, originally it was gold. And although it was never officially declared that it wasn't gold anymore, it de facto became oil. And the reality of it is that you don't crumble up, you don't like grind up oil and put it in the tank of your car and burn it up, you know? So my argument is that having a basis for your currency that is a volatile and consumable thing, probably not a good idea. Just a computer guy, just, you know, spouting off over here.
For economics.
And then you take it one step further and then you go to crypto and you're like, that's even more volatile and potentially consumable, in my opinion. You know, I'm coming from a place where I've helped several customers who like watched some infomercial at 3 a.m. on QVC about crypto and immediately the next morning called, I've got to get into crypto. Okay. And their hair's on fire. Like, I need to talk to you before the end of the week, you know. And I go and I help them get set up on crypto. And I swear to God, it's not 2 or 3 weeks later, I get another hair on fire call. And it's like, you've got to get me out of crypto. So I'm just going on that experience, you know. And this is the thing that we're like looking at sinking some of our, you know, the national monetary resources into, you know. I'm not taking the people that have the idea to task at all. I'm taking the idea of putting that money. You know, you might as well get some of those guys from the world. What do they call it? The World Series of Poker. You know, I mean, just give them a big old bag of that and go, hey man, double it for us. You know, we've seen you do it on TV. You can do it. You know, so right.
It's all about what the. What people think is valuable.
Yeah, that's all rolling the dice, you know? So,
well,
it's
not even.
Yeah.
It's all made up.
Exactly.
And the points don't matter.
Yeah. So, that's why I brought you 3 chickens in exchange for a cheeseburger. So, That's
well, the Costco exchange rate for chickens, that might be about right.
Exactly.
I think there's the three roasted chickens from Costco. That's
I love
right.
it when people do barter with me, though. I mean, I almost always accept barter, you know.
Yeah.
It's and
yeah, I will often accept barter.
Yeah. So let's see. We are like down to the wire here. Any other little tidbits you want to spout out there, Matt?
Yeah. It's, you know, it's just pretty quiet this time of year.
Uh-huh.
Everyone's busy doing their taxes, which is my project for the week.
I was going to say, first thing I did this morning was like doing
I had my bookkeeper
some
put
bank
in.
Bank paperwork.
So. I had my bookkeeper put all the expenses in, so now I can run the reports, and now I can plug the reports into my tax system, and then I will have an 1120S sometime this week.
Nice. Well, I know my accountant, who was also one of my customers, kept telling me how easy it was. And he said, I'll show you how to do it, you know. And I'm like, no.
You can do it.
My history with the IRS, that is not a good idea. Not at all. So, well, you know what that music means. You've wasted another perfectly good 25 minutes of your life listening to Geek Speak. And we will be back on the 20th?
17th.
Oh, that's right.
It's the 3rd.
Why do I always do that? I'm so retarded. Anyway, we will be back on the 17th. Take us on out, man.
All right. You've been listening to Geek Speak on KDK. I'm your host, Matt McBrayer, from Roaring Fork Help Desk, in studio with Ludi, the computer guy.
Hey, thanks a lot, Matt.
You're welcome.
We'll see you guys in a couple weeks.